May it please the Court, Mr. Russell. The respondent in this case has engaged in multiple instances of professional misconduct. On three occasions, he pled guilty to alcohol-related misdemeanor driving offenses in violation of Rule 4-8.4b. This is admitted. For the second time in his relatively brief legal career, he also failed to cooperate with the OCDC's investigation of one of the cases in this matter in violation of 4-8.1c. This is also admitted. Finally, the disciplinary hearing panel found that respondent violated the rules in his representation of his client, Ms. Tete, by failing to provide an accounting of legal services provided to her and by failing to and by unreasonably delaying the payment of an $1,800 refund of the fee she paid and obtained through the Missouri Bar's fee dispute resolution process. This latter charge is disputed. Both parties agree that suspension is the appropriate baseline for the misconduct present in this case. The parties disagree, however, on whether or not the suspension should be stayed with a period of probation imposed or whether the suspension should be an actual suspension. Informant submits that the facts specific to this case, combined with respondent's prior disciplinary history and an analysis of this court's 2011 decision in the Stewart case, suggests that respondent should be suspended indefinitely with no leave to apply for reinstatement for 6 months. Respondent was licensed as an attorney in September 2003. Within a few months, in November of 2003, he was ticketed for driving while intoxicated. He ultimately pled guilty to a misdemeanor of driving with a blood alcohol content over 0.08% and was sentenced to 1 year of supervised probation. In July 2004, while the 2003 charge was still pending, respondent was ticketed again for driving while intoxicated by the Springfield Police Department. He was also ticketed at that time for driving with a suspended license and for speeding. In January 2006, respondent pled guilty to the DWI charge, was ordered to pay a fine, and received a suspended 90-day sentence. He was also placed on 2 years of unsupervised probation, ordered to perform community service in order to complete the Substance Abuse Traffic Offender Program. Finally, in February of 2012, a felony complaint was filed in Saline County charging respondent as a persistent alcohol offender with driving while intoxicated. Respondent was ordered to participate in drug court and to submit to random urinalysis testing. In October 2012, he tested positive for the presence of alcohol in his system. After completing the drug court, respondent pled guilty in May of 2014 to the Class D misdemeanor of driving while intoxicated. All of these drunk driving offenses violated Rule 4-8.4b.
No. That same statement is repeated in the briefs. He was charged with a felony but pled to a misdemeanor. Is that
That's correct. Facts? That's correct, Judge Fisher.
So, and he was not, was he, and he was initially put in drug court, right? He was initially put in their treatment court.
At some point during that process, okay, after being charged, he was placed in the drug court.
So he, when was he placed in treatment court then after a plea or prior to plea?
I believe it was prior to the plea. He was placed in and completed successfully the drug court.
Did he graduated from drug court?
I believe he did, yes. Okay. In the spring of 2014.
There was no requirement to plead to the felony before being permitted in treatment court.
No, I don't believe so.
So where they do it there, they're in treatment court before they actually plead to anything?
I believe that's correct.
Okay.
Although that's what was confusing to me specifically, but I believe that's the way it worked out here too.
So comparing this respondent to the respondent in Stewart, was it the same number of DWI convictions that each of them have?
No, Judge Russell. In Stewart, there were four DWI convictions. The last one was a felony conviction. Mm-hmm. And that is certainly a distinguishing factor between Stewart and this case that the respondent goes to great lengths to point out.
I was going to say that's the key distinction they point out is here they're misdemeanors and there was a felony and that our cases have treated felonies differently.
No doubt. And in fact, our office has treated felonies differently. In fact, the procedural posture of the Stewart case was one in which we filed it under 5.21. Because of the felony conviction. It allowed us to streamline the discipline process, file the information directly in the court. In this case, because of the misdemeanors, we filed it under Rule 5.11, the normal disciplinary process we follow. That said, one thing that struck me in reviewing the Stewart case, in both Judge Russell and your majority opinion, as well as in Judge Tottleman's concurrence, is the number of times that the court references conduct. It's certainly important to the court that it was a felony conviction, and certainly was a factor in determining sanction. But throughout that opinion, there are numerous references to conduct. And in my way of thinking, in our view, in this case, that conduct has to be looked at in a similar fashion as the Stewart case was looked at.
Is part of your philosophical belief in that regard is that there are just some places in this state where this defendant would have never been allowed to plead to a misdemeanor out there?
I believe that's correct.
Regardless of his recovery, if you will.
Correct.
So there are multiple offenses in both cases, it's fair to say.
That's correct, Judge Russell. The other thing I'd like to point...
Should we be effective, though, in addressing that? I'm sorry, but the drug court, too, in that he graduated drug court and it was changed to a misdemeanor because he had gone through drug court and successfully completed it.
That's correct. And certainly in both cases, there was a commitment to sobriety that both Stewart as well as the respondent in this case have committed to. In Stewart, it was noted, but it didn't at least change the sanction from an actual suspension to a state suspension. In my view, the commitment to sobriety is a great thing, but certainly only a factor and maybe a mitigating factor. There are other factors, I think, present in this case that actually aggravate the case and make it also distinguishable from Stewart. In this case, we have other disciplinary sanctions. Stewart involved only DWI convictions. This case involves a second instance of failing to cooperate with our office's investigation. He was previously reprimanded for that by this court, and now has come back to the court with a violation for failing to cooperate with one of our investigations. In my view, that's a serious matter. Secondly, we have the representation of a client in this case, Ms. Tete, where he was asked to provide an accounting to the client and just failed and refused to do so. She goes to the fee dispute committee operated by the bar, and is basically through that process, he agrees to refund $1,800 of a $2,500 fee, but it takes him 10 months from the date of the termination of the representation to refund that fee, and almost 6 months after he agreed to do so before he actually paid the $1,800
back. I had a question
back.
About that, because fee disputes are not subject to sanction. Those are separately dealt with by that. Was a complaint filed about the delay, and was that subject to a separate information?
I believe the complaint with our office was filed in advance of or contemporaneously with perhaps the fee dispute. The charge, though, was for failing to provide the accounting and delay after agreeing to pay the $1,800, the delay in paying it, not that she had to resort to the fee dispute committee.
So that was a separate charge in your petition?
Well,
the delay?
The panel did not charge. In other words, the fact that they all go to the fee dispute process to me is not a violation of the rules. That's a process that's available through the
right,
bar.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. But I'm unclear once they resolved it, his failing to pay, how is that in your court? How is that relevant to your claim since it was referred to them, unless it was the subject of a separate complaint and petition and case?
Well, I believe we became aware of it, Judge Stiff. The point being that he agreed to the refund of the $1,800 in December of 2013, in 2012 perhaps, doesn't repay it until the end of May.
But we
believe that was even by agreement, once he agrees to refund that money, it should have been done promptly.
But was that the subject of a separate complaint? How can you consider that when it's not something that you filed in a petition, he's had a chance to respond and you address, you know, if it was referred over there, I'm just not clear it's in your court at this point to consider because it wasn't part of the charge.
I'm not certain whether during that process Ms. Tete makes us aware of the fact that he made this agreement and then hasn't paid me yet. I'm not aware of that.
But you didn't take back the referral. I mean, so I'm not clear why that's something you consider. But go ahead.
It's fact. It's something we did consider because once he's agreed to repay that money, the other thing that's important to us is he's collected a $2,500 fee, $1,800 of which he voluntarily says, yeah, I didn't earn it, and it's 10 months since he was terminated, 6 months since he agrees to repay it back. But to me, 10 months since the termination of that representation, beholding that money is simply a violation of 1.16.
But you didn't charge that, and that's my problem with it. If you, I'm not saying you couldn't have filed something that said this was a violation, but if you didn't, is it fair to ask us to consider it, or isn't that
certainly
uncharged misconduct?
Correct. And in our view, it went hand in hand with the fact that he failed to give the accounting that she did file the complaint on. The other thing I want to point out before time runs is between Stewart in this case is the disciplinary history. And Stewart, Mr. Stewart received an admonition prior to appearing before this court, and it was for diligence and communication. In this case, we have an attorney that received in January of 2011 a reprimand from the court, public discipline, for a violation of the confidentiality and conflicts rules that occurred as a result of conduct in which he knowingly dated the wife of a client of his then law firm. So the law firm is representing a husband in a divorce. He's knowingly dating the wife of that husband who's a client of the firm. He was also sanctioned at that time in 2011 through the reprimand for failing to cooperate with our office. Again, I think this is distinguishable from Stewart in that regard, that we have other violations that go with the case and disciplinary history that, in my view, is much more significant than was present in the Stewart case. I want to note, in Judge Teitelman, in your concurrence in the Stewart case, you noted that the conduct was not even tangentially related to the representation of clients, and that certainly was something that was true in Stewart, and certainly the DWI and drunk driving charges in this case, that's true. Nevertheless, we do have this other conduct that is directly related to client representations, namely the Tete representation, the fact that he fails to cooperate with our office's investigation, which to my way of thinking is related to a client representation. We're asking that the court indefinitely suspend the respondent's license with no leave to apply for reinstatement for 6 months. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. First off, in regard to the question posed, the practice, as I understand it, in Saline County Drug Court, which is a hybrid drug DWI court, is that you make an offer to plead guilty, which the court takes under advisement until the drug court is either completed satisfactorily or non-satisfactorily. And that's what happened in this case. This court adopted Rule 5.225, which talks about eligibility for probation. And a lawyer is eligible for probation if he's unlikely to harm the public during the period of probation and can be adequately supervised. He's able to perform legal services and able to practice law without causing the courts or profession to fall into disrepute and has not committed acts warranting disbarment. When we were working on this case, we put it off for hearing until such time as we determined whether Mr. Raines would complete the drug court. We have a very interesting situation in this case in that the judge in charge of the drug court came in and testified. Not only did he complete it, he was a model for the drug court. And Mr. Pratzel is correct that in October of 2012, he had an alcohol-positive urine. And the court did what I think makes the drug DWI court so effective. It has some hammer. And so they said, you're on house arrest. You're going on scram. And so he did 60 days of that. He is a perfect example of why the drug courts work and how they work. Since October of 2012, he has not had a drink. He has changed his lifestyle, which was one where he used to go to the bars and socialize and end up with problems. But at the conclusion of his drug court, DWI court, the court has determined they want him because he's a model of what should be, to become a member of the drug court team and serve as the defense representative on the drug court team, which they don't have. Judge Harvey described the purposes of the drug court, treatment court, being let's find out what's the basis of the addiction or the problem, let's address it, see if we can cure it, and then let's return the person to being a productive member of society. And the drug court requires you to have a job and to be productive. The sheriff of Saline County, having served the longest of any presently serving sheriff, came out and testified on behalf of Mr. Raines that he is aware that he has quit drinking. He and the judge both agree that he presents no problem and no harm likely to the public, either through driving or through the handling of clients' affairs. Judge Harvey indicates he's one of the very best lawyers in Saline County who comes there. Sheriff George indicated if he had a problem, he'd be a guy he would go to, would hire him. He has a very good reputation as a lawyer, and he's very able. The situation in this case is that had the OCDC read the Stewart case correctly, I don't think we'd be here. I think we would have had a probation. Ms. Wheaton took the position that Stewart prevents and prohibits any thought of probation in this case. And it doesn't hold that. It clearly doesn't hold that. Judge Russell fortunately put some titles on the various sections that let you know where to look fairly quickly. And one of them, five, is a stayed suspension is not warranted. And what does she say? Staying Stewart's suspension for a period of probation would be inconsistent with this court's previous cases involving felony convictions for multiple DWIs. That is not this case. He has a prior DWI and a prior BAC before he goes into the drug court. He had those in 03 and 04. He doesn't have a violation until 8 years later when he goes into the drug court. Clearly, he is eligible for probation. The concern was voiced by counsel for the chief disciplinary counsel at the hearing that if we put Mr. Raines on probation, it would bring the profession and the courts into disrepute. That is refuted by the testimony of the mayor of Marshall, the sheriff of Saline County, and the head of the drug court, but more specifically, it's just not correct. This man's history in the drug court is exemplary. He has one urinalysis situation, and that was the seminal moment for him in his life to make a change. He has not had a drink since that time, without any question. There isn't anybody that has anything to say otherwise.
What about the other 2 points about failure to cooperate and not paying the $1,800?
Well, first on failure to cooperate, certainly he should have responded, Judge. And he didn't. I can tell you, in doing a lot of this work, I don't find that to be an unusual situation. People get panicky and don't get the job done. It's stupid not to do. It creates an atmosphere.
He had not yet retained you, right? He had not yet retained the lawyer to...
No, he did not.
What about
his assistant? And I can tell you, since I've been in the case, we've been completely cooperative, and I'm sure Mr. Pretzel would tell you the same thing. We've agreed on the fact that this is a suspension case.
What about this issue that, you know, we can either consider his keeping the money and then slow pay on what he agreed to do now, or we cannot consider it now and give Mr. Pretzel the option to file a separate action if that's what's required to consider. Which would you prefer happen? Would you prefer we consider everything now?
I prefer we wrap the thing up, certainly. But I've been looking at Mr. Pratzel's reports for a long time, and one of the things that they always have is fee dispute resolutions, and we refer them there, and the statement is they don't have jurisdiction to deal with them. My position has always been in this case that this was truly a fee dispute situation in which the disciplinary process was utilized as an adjunct to the resolution process. And the fee dispute was taken care of in the fee dispute resolution process. Why he didn't get the check there, his explanation was essentially that he wrote the check and it fell through the crack and didn't get where it was supposed to be, and that was to go to the resolution committee rather than to the client. But I would say to you that instead of bringing the profession or the courts into disrepute, when you look at the drug courts and the purpose of the drug courts and the successes that it has had and the support that this court has given to the treatment court, this is a pretty good success story. And to put this guy on probation is warranted in this situation.
What about the fact that you know as well as we do that there would be places where he could have this exact same result, which is admirable, that he's overcome his problems. There's no doubt about that. But that he would have a felony record. That would just be part of the deal. He would have pled guilty at the very outset. It would have remained a felony, despite the fact that they would have later seen all the good that he's done, make him a part of the team and everything else. Is that the one thing that separates this from the heading and steward?
That might well be true. But also, Judge, when you elect to go to the drug court, you give up your right to contest anything. You're there for treatment. And he got the treatment, and it's a success, and he ends up with the misdemeanor. He had a defense in this case. I mean, this is not a case where there's any erratic driving. There's no wreck. There's no speeding. There's no weaving. There's none of this. What happened was he was observed in a bar in a little dispute with some policemen who were dealing with a client ahead of him. One of the cops sees him drive, calls out and said, "I think he's intoxicated." He gets pulled over in his driveway. This is not a situation where he's involved in bad driving when this comes up. But if he does not receive probation, he goes for 6 months before he can apply for reinstatement. He obviously has to take the MPRE. And it's interesting that in the transcript of the disciplinary hearing panel, Ms. Whedon indicated to the panel that at the time of his reinstatement application, it would be anticipated, and that would be hopefully 6 months, that, and this is at page 115 and 116, that he would be placed, would be recommended for reinstatement and on probation. So it's just 6 months and you're going to have him on probation. But what is the effect if he's not on probation? What's the story? The 50 to 60 people who are his clients and all have to go find somebody else to deal with their problems. As the mayor says, he handles a lot of work for people who are underprivileged, so to speak, and those people will be denied the guy that they hired for something that really happened a couple of years ago. And I see the the downside to that is that here are people say, why should we lose our lawyer? He went through the DWI court. He successfully did it. He's a model. The court wants him to continue working with it. He would be contributing to the purposes of the drug court. It's a very positive message that comes out if he continues to do that. It's a non-positive message if he doesn't. If he's not on probation, one of the goals of the drug court is to put you back to work, make you productive. But you're not doing that. We're taking him out of that position. And I would suggest to you that there is certainly nothing about Stewart that says he can't be on probation. And the disciplinary hearing panel adopted the position of the OCDC that Stewart mandated no consideration of probation. And this is a case where probation ought to be considered and analyzed. He's an excellent lawyer. You read the testimony of Judge Harvey, the drug court judge, of the mayor, of Marshall, and of the sheriff. I think it's very compelling that this gentleman ought to be on probation. He's a valued member of their community, been very, very active in civic stuff, head of the United Way, president of Rotary Club, worked on the services board. He's an active guy, and he is at this point the go-to guy for the lower range kind of criminal stuff in Saline County, and that will be gone. There's just no reason not to put him on probation. I certainly understand that he should have responded. He has responded since we've been in the case, and we have completely cooperated and agreed, as they say, on what the punishment ought to be. They didn't have to prove a bunch of stuff. So I think he's a great candidate for probation and a great story for the treatment courts. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Pratzel.
I do want to clarify one point regarding count two of our information, the Tete count. We did actually charge in the information. In other words, we did charge the failure to make the refund. And while I understand what you're asking about, Judge Stith, I mean, in other words, we knew at that time that of the filing of the information that it had not been made, that refund had not occurred. And I understand your point that perhaps it wasn't complained about, but nevertheless, it was
something. Well, Rule 510 says if you refer it over, you can take it back. But if it wasn't formally referred back, I don't think it was before you under the rule. But that's all right.
I just want you to know that it wasn't something that was created out of thin air in front of the panel. This was something that was charged in the information as a violation, the fact that refund was not made. Mr. Russell points out that if we had correctly interpreted Stewart, we wouldn't be here because we would have agreed to probation. I couldn't disagree more. First of all, I think we'd have been here even if we had agreed to probation, because after that Stewart decision, I think the court would have wanted some sort of understanding as to why would we agree to probation after the Stewart, so soon after this court issued the Stewart decision. In our view, in analyzing Stewart, you can't simply pigeonhole it into a felony conviction case. It is conduct. And the fact is we have multiple instances of DWI misconduct, criminal offenses, present in this case as we did in Stewart. In addition, the additional violations here with Tete and the failure to cooperate are, in our view, serious matters, especially in the context of information.
After he successfully completed the drug court regimen, has he violated any of the drug issues or been picked up or done anything wrong in that regard?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Do you believe that he will present a danger to his clients in the next 6 months if he were to practice during that time?
I have no reason to think that, but this court's decision in Stewart was based on the damage to the integrity of the bar. And in my view, that damage is present in this case. if not more so, because of the other violations we have present. So, you know, it's really up to the court. I mean, is it, in our view, are you going to extend Stewart to this fact pattern, which is not on all fours with Stewart? In my view, it's one less DWI, and it's a lot more disciplinary misconduct. And so are you going to extend it or not? That's for you to decide. In our view, it warranted exactly the same kind of treatment as the Stewart case did.
These are difficult cases, and I want to commend both Mr. Pratzel and Judge Russell for your excellent representation.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. The matter will be taken under submission, and the